You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Exactly. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Steve Schlamm, actor, writer, and an interesting fellow. We have spoken once before, and I was looking forward. I'm looking forward to this conversation because after we left the last conversation, I said, geez, I'd like to speak to that guy again. And here we are. So that's good.
Thank you for the kind words, and I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. The occasion for this conversation is not Steve's acting, although maybe we'll speak a little bit about that, but it is because he has written a book, and it is called The Harvesting of Haystack's Cane. It was published in 24, right?
Yes, it was published about a year ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is Steve's first book, as I understand it, right? The first published book.
My maiden voyage, as I said.
It's your maiden voyage. And that in and of itself is interesting, but let's start with the book itself. So Haystack's Cane. Well, you know, for fallen away professional wrestling.
The book, it is a novel. First of all, if anybody doesn't realize that at this moment, it was published a year ago. It is, it's been long listed for two international awards, literary awards. It's available in many different ways, Amazon and Barnes and Noble and through my publisher's website, which is, www.8thhousepublishing.com. And it's also available. And this is the part I like to say the best, wherever good books are sold. The central character, the protagonist, is named Haystack's Cane, K-A-N-E, and he was born Herschel Cain, C-A-I-N, in Brooklyn, New York. He's really a nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn, New York, who is essentially inveigled. He's willingly inveigled into the violent and not altogether authentic world of professional wrestling, in which his essential goodness, I suppose you would call it, his innocence, his essential goodness, is harvested, exploited, used to other people's advantages. He is a person, a gentle giant, who gives not a whit for fame nor fortune, sees good wherever he goes, in everybody he meets. And that type of person is, of course, a ripe target for exploitation. And his situation, in a sense, reflects that directly, because the book, the novel, or at least his portion of the novel, takes place in a hospital room where he is lying in a hospital bed, really two beds kind of lashed together. Because he weighs 607 pounds and he is immobilized, unable to speak, and attempting in his halting, disordered way, because he is semi-comatose some of the time, comatose some of the time, to figure out what's happened, both in the short run, and over the longer course of his life. He's there because he's lost a match to his arch rival and longtime nemesis, another wrestler called Valentino, who actually has slept with his wife. And so, he is, in a very serious state of being, literally fighting for his life.
But let me ask you this. So I know from our last conversation, the idea for this book came in a dream.
It did. It sounds like a writer's cliche, you know, oh, well, it came to me in a dream.
From a dream, right.
It really did.
It really did. But did it come as did the portion of the book that came from the dream come with Haystack's cane?
No, that's a very good question, David. No, it did not. What came to me was initially was the last line of the book, which is spoken by an African American lady of the evening, we shall say. And that line is, y'all don't know what it's like to have all that inside you.
Mm.
And with that line came a cascade of voices.
You're talking about the dream. You're talking about the dream, right?
Right. In the initial dream, I'm living in Brooklyn at the time where I'm from originally. And it's hot. It's July. We have an air conditioner that kind of works in the bedroom, and that's it. And the dream throws me right up into consciousness. And all of a sudden I'm completely disoriented and I'm hearing all these voices. And I think to myself, well, I'm crazy. I've gone over the edge.
This is it. This is the moment.
And now soon they're going to come after me with the butterfly nets and take me away to get the rest I obviously need. And then of course, literally moments afterwards, I realized, I'm not crazy. Well, I'm crazy in the best possible way because what I'm hearing are characters. And that prompted me to get up, go to my government issue, Army Navy store desk, and sit down and start to capture whatever I could capture. And so the central character I knew instantly was a fat man, a very fat man.
Why? One of my questions about that is, so especially since the Haystacks, regardless of his name, the character, you didn't just land on this character. You then had to craft him.
Yes, that's right.
How'd you land there?
I had an outline. Okay. And then I had to fill in all the details. It's as though I did a sketch on a canvas and then I had to create the rest of the painting. It's a portrait. I received a portrait without details.
Right.
And the rest of the time writing the book had two purposes. One was to fill in all those details.
Yeah.
And the environment around that the figure in that portrait and the activity and action that figure was engaged in over time. And the second thing, maybe even more important, is I wrote the entire novel to get to that last line. That was the motivating force for the entire exercise. Several years, which is, that's another part of the story. But yes, that's where it's at.
So do you have a clue about how you landed, how/why you landed on the character being a very large wrestler?
Yes.
Right. Did that in some way help tell the story? Did you discover things about the dream as you landed there, right? It wasn't just a fat guy who happened to be a used car salesman. It was a wrestler. He had a life of whatever he had a life of. And was there something about one of the questions that kept coming back to me is how much of Steve Schlamm is in this character?
Well, I mean, I don't remember who said it, but someone once said about painting that all paintings are self-portraits.
Right.
I think to some extent, all works of art are self-portraits because after all, what do we know most of all? Sometimes that's all that, what do we know that is all we know except about ourselves and our own experience. And inevitably, some of one's own life experience is going to seep into whatever characters one is drawing on the canvas or in a novel or a short story or a movie. Right. It doesn't really matter. And so in my case, I'm sure that, I mean, there were actual incidents. I'm not going to tell you what.
But no, don't tell me what.
Incidents in the book that come directly out of my own life.
From your life.
And right. It's not an autobiography or a biography of anybody. And so, but those incidents appeared to me to be relevant and appropriate in the context of the story I was telling about the character. And the fact that he and I share some experience doesn't mean the book is about me at all. You know, it's just my experience was appropriate for his story at that moment.
Right.
And, okay. And as far as I may, as far as how I got to him as a wrestler, as opposed to anything else, a cab driver or something, I believe that the dream, the fat man in the dream was possibly my own father, who was a fat man.
And
but of course my father was not a wrestler. How that image of that man and that woman telling him, you know, you don't know what it's like to have all that inside you, how that translated into a wrestler. I honestly cannot say. I know it evolved very quickly. I knew the character was in the midst of a great struggle.
Mm-hmm.
That was a struggle for, in a sense, for his very existence. I very quickly saw him in the hospital. Very quickly.
Very quickly means, well, we should wait. Let's finish this little picture first.
Sure.
So the dream happened. There I go with my hands again. It blurs me out. Sorry. The dream happened 40 years ago, right? This book had been in the process of being made,
yeah.
Dreamt, made, and
yeah.
For it began 40 years back,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So all that filling it out. So I guess I want to know, is Steve Schlamm, who woke up 40 years back there, maybe 41 now, with that dream, with that final line and voices of characters, was Steve Schlamm a guy who thought about the wrestling with one's life? And I don't want to use that. I'm not, you know, the character in your book is, it's interesting to me that the harvesting, you use the word harvesting to talk about, he was a gentle fellow and mild fellow, didn't care about all sorts of things. And so he could easily be harvested.
And a target for harvesting. Let's put
yes,
it.
And that's interesting because I was thinking that the word harvesting, which I think is super interesting in this case,
I did when I found that word.
Fabulous!
But in a way, it was right on the money, right on target.
I thought that the reference was to this guy in the hospital bed, sort of. Thinking about his life, thinking about his experiences, experiencing life, that he was harvesting. He was trying, the harvesting was him trying to make sense out of, find meaning, harvest meaning from all of these events.
That's
interesting.
That's really very good, David. And I will tell you quite honestly, I never thought of it that way myself. I never applied that verb, harvesting.
Yeah.
Experience. But you're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, you write a novel, you create a film, you create a painting, whatever.
Yeah.
Put it out in the world, and then it's no longer yours.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The audience, the world at large, begins to tell you what it means.
What it is, yeah.
What the world thinks it means and what you thought it meant are not necessarily the same things at all.
Super.
And I think hearing you say it, and processing it quickly, obviously, because we're in this setting. Yeah. I think that's right on. I really do. So
yeah,
I believe that's one layer of it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It is. It's a, It's an interesting word. It's an interesting word. That's great. Okay. So you started with the last line of the book. And I wonder if you would, I know that you've, I asked you to find something to read. And you said that it's the opening of the book. So I'm wondering if.
I thought we'd begin at the beginning, as they said.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Well, we began at the end, right? The last line. So now maybe take us back to the beginning for a moment.
This is the opening of the Harvesting of Haystacks Cane. The chapter title is chapter one, of course, and the title is Herschel, The First Day. It must have been something that happened to me in the ring or afterwards. I just don't know. Or maybe even before. I really can't say for sure. A bellows is breathing me. My heart pounding like a golden hammer, a hammer pounding a silver bell, and there are waves of radiant silver gold spreading in concentric circles through my chest, a feeling that is almost sound. A faucet is open inside my stomach. I can hear it, feel it, the acids, the enzymes, the warm black blood going drip, drip, drip through the pylorus, drip and gurgle, gurgle and slither, slither and rumble, rumble and growl. Every so often, shooting stars go off inside my kidneys. Every so often, I emit a burp. Large, round, troubled burps. The sound of a bullfrog inside a barrel. The light is hot, heavy on my eyelids. Oxygen rushes in waves to my brain, and I feel woozy, faint, vaguely electric. Everything is bright, so bright. And I spin and fall, ooh, in a rush, the way you do on a roller coaster as it barrels into the big drop. I am sweating, dripping, and my insides are oozing, crawling, clawing, and have the consistency of beef liver, hot from the kill. The rest of me is clammy, weak, and heavy, especially my arms and legs, which seem to be melting, dissolving like ice cream left out in the heat. I am 607 hapless pounds of dull throbbing aches and stabbing pains, of burning sensations, inflammations, and the air around me is curiously tense and seems to be disintegrating into minute particles of some unbearably bright and glittery metal that swirl and shimmer like the snow in one of those cheap plastic domes one buys at souvenir stands and curiosity shops on the boardwalks of decaying seaside resorts or sleazy ports of call where sailors take their leave. There is a greasy film like Vaseline covering my eyes. I may have fractured my cervical spine, but I am not afraid of dying, or don't believe that I am, or anyway, am not sure.
Well, thank you. Wow. That's splendid. That's splendid. That's the beginning. That's the opening page.
Generally the opening of the novel.
Well, yeah. That's powerful.
And
just in case you didn't know. Yeah. And that style, is it that voice throughout?
No.
You know, I sent for the book, but I didn't. It hasn't arrived, so.
It's okay.
So, yeah, but.
Is it that voice throughout? There is a lot of, rich, ripe language like that. Some of it is this is still linear. In other words, he's speaking in sentences that take you from one place in a straight line to another place. There are other passages that are what I would call pure stream of consciousness in which, lived experience in the moment, memories, kind of side issue interjections and things all jumbled together to create what I hope is a picture of someone's consciousness in action, and literally in moment-to-moment action. And there's a whole bunch of it that's just straight narrative, you know. The book is a series of monologues, essentially, that I structured in a kind of point counterpoint or call and response pattern, in which a series of thoughts and ruminations by Herschel Hayseck are followed by a monologue or series of thoughts and ruminations by someone who's close to him or connected to him, either was connected to him in the past or is connected in the present. And so it goes back and forth like that.
But not the question. Is he able to communicate with people in the room? No. So this, and so are there ever people in the room who are speaking?
These other people appear, and they appear in the same literary space that he appears in. Whether they are actually sitting in the room talking to him, or have simply entered his disordered inner world, because again, don't forget he's comatose or semi-comatose.
Right.
I never make that determination for the reader. I let the reader decide it on.
Yeah.
I know, I will tell you, there is at least one segment where there is actually someone in the room, and that someone is his ex-wife, who, as I said earlier, slept with his nemesis, the other wrestler, Valentino. And she divorced, Herschel, that is. And she does literally come to visit him. But that's the only one where I will say definitively that there's someone in the room.
Right, right. It's interesting as you started, do you feel affection for this character? Do you, Steve, do you feel affection for Herschel, for Hayseck?
Yes. I think I don't. That's also a very interesting question, because as an actor, I will tell you that sometimes the best character to play is the worst person in the world. You have so many hooks to hang your head on, your acting chops on.
Yeah.
I think the act of making art is an act of sympathy for humanity. Or even greater than that, an act of empathy for humankind. And that, which is to say in a highfalutin kind of a way, that you take in all of these people that you're populating your novel or your film, whatever, are people that you're creating. I mean, they don't really exist. They're your children. Now, you don't love all your children equally.
Yes, that's right.
But you do love them. They're part of you. There's a soul, or blood to blood, or soul to soul connection. And so that would be my answer to your question.
Yeah. I asked it because as you were reading it, and maybe it's because I know the story, or I don't know the story, but I felt affection for him.
He is someone really worth feeling affection for. Mm. He really is a gentle, innocent soul. He's a devoted butterfly collector. His father was a butterfly collector. He's had a terrible life. His father abandoned the family when he was right before his bar mitzvah age, about 13. His mother was killed in a hit and run accident, and his sister was raped and committed suicide later on. And so life hasn't been easy, and he yet retains a just a loving, center that connects him with everybody. Sees good everywhere, as I said. So the character I would liken him to in all of literature that I've ever been in contact with is Ferdinand the Bull.
Oh, wow, that's incredible. I was just thinking about that character. I was just, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, I don't know if it was a sketch and it was a children's book, right? And so, I don't know if it's just
this. Well, I mean, it's designated a children's book, but I read about it. I made that connection very early on, that this character was like Ferdinand the Bull.
That's great.
Who wanted only to, he didn't want to be a bull fight, and you know, he didn't want to be in the bull ring. He could care less. He wanted to sit in the field and smell the flowers.
Flowers, exactly. I remember seeing a sketch of, and maybe it's in the book, of Ferdinand sitting, sort of smelling flowers. Yeah. This gentle creature who just, you know, he happens to be big. It's, you know, it's like that line from what was that? Roger Rabbit, the movie, right? You know, when Jessica Rabbit comes on the screen and she says, don't hate me. I was just drawn this way.
Yeah, that's right. Like,
well, I just happened to be a big guy. I'm sorry.
I mean, you know, my character, Haystacks or Herschel.
Yeah.
I basically think of him as Herschel. I do not think of him as Haystacks. Haystacks right. is like a costume. It's a false identity that he wears. Much like the costume that he wears, the overalls and the horseshoe that dangles from his neck. But Herschel is the real human being, and what he wants, because I don't want to give away all the secrets.
But he wants
a devoted butterfly collector, and what he wants to do now, and what he's grappling with, and note the use of the word grappling. What he's grappling with, as he lies in the hospital bed, is how can he be transported to Greece, specifically to the Valley of the Butterflies on the island of Rhodes, which is called Petaloudis. Mm-hmm. Kind of anagram that you can find loud petals in those words, in that word, and that's kind of what he wants to do is live in the Valley of the Butterflies and listen to the sound of butterflies. And if you think about it, there is no such thing as.
I was going to say, what sounds do butterflies make?
And yet, it is. I mean, as I told you, you take the word petaludus, you make loud petals, and that's kind of what it is. It's a kind of an essence. You know, the unseen, untouched essence. I'm missing a word, but of the universe. You know, of truth and beauty and the universe itself.
Well, you just anticipated my next sort of where I wanted to take that, which is, so you woke with the dream. And the undetailed, or certainly not fully detailed sketch, and then you filled it out. So were you conscious of themes that you wanted to explore using this device that you created called Herschel, called Haystacks?
To an extent, I also once heard someone say that consciousness kills art, and so I was at a literature teacher. He taught Faulkner, actually, who always talked about being thesis written, and I didn't want to be thesis written. Mm-hmm. Kind of follow the subtext inside me, if that makes any sense.
No, that's
the line, the river that was, or stream that was flowing inside me, and to follow that out as far as it went and not impose upon it, you know, a rigid thematic construction.
This is where you start speaking like a writer, because like especially a novelist, right? The novelists always say, you know, the characters led me. The character spoke to me, right? I wasn't creating them. They were sort of speaking in relationship. They were in relationship to me. And those of us who are not those people kind of, there's something that you sort of understand, that one sort of understands about that, but it's only sort of, you know, it's only sort of. And so maybe this is just a silly question. It feels like there's this overlap that I know nothing about between an actor and this process that you're in, right? So do you think that, or how is it that being an actor sort of makes its way into how you decided to write this book, or how it wrote itself?
It was not part of the genesis of the novel. It was not part of the reason I wrote the book.
Right.
It wasn't a major, it wasn't a major prompt for writing the book. How it influenced, how being an actor and understanding something about the process of acting, how that, perhaps made its way into the novel or influenced it. It influences the novel in the sense that the novel deals on one level with a protagonist who lives inside a false identity. And that's what every actor does during the course of the play or the film, that he or she is performing it. And so in the case of Herschel Cain, Haystacks Cain is in fact that false identity. It is a costume he wears, as I think I said just a little while ago, like his overalls or the horseshoe around his neck.
Yeah.
And it is that false identity that he realizes during his time lying in bed, immobile and unable to speak. That false identity is the costume that he has to shuck off in order to be whole at last, free at last, a fully realized self, an authentic human being.
Mm.
And so it's another way that the butterfly serves as a kind of a supra symbol in the book, because if you think about it, what I'm just describing is metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that this wasn't, these are not your words, these are mine, but in some very literal way, it is, that's what happens when you harvest, right? You take this whole plant and then you get rid of certain things to find some sort of essence that, you know, we happen to like as food, right? Get to that thing,
the kernel of it.
Yeah.
In fact, Herschel spends quite a bit of time looking for the meaning of it, capital I, capital T.
Mm.
Is it the it that has put him in has taken everybody who was ever important to him from him, inflicted a good deal of pain and suffering on him, or is it the it, and landed him in that bed or those beds, or is it the it that will allow him to throw off the shackles of his past and be transported to Greece, which in his mind, a kind of Eden, you know, in which he can, at least he can live, as I said, amongst the butterflies he loves. Right.
He can sit in the field and smell the flowers in his own way. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Ferdinand connection.
Yeah. So can we switch gears? I'm trying to be. I'm cognizant of the time, and
sure,
which is a shame. But
like we said before, it is what it is.
It is what it is, indeed. Is there a literary ancestor or mentor is the wrong word, but do you have a literary ideal that you're like a touchstone?
Yes, I do, and his name is William Faulkner.
That's not a bad one to have.
In my judgment, and I really should be putting on a flak jacket when I say this, but in my judgment, is the greatest writer who has ever lived.
Yeah.
And has at least one novel that I would consider to be perfect, which is these, and that's a pretty good trick because
perfect
candidates,
big,
many candidates for this title, but to me, The Sound and the Fury is the greatest novel ever written.
Mm.
It is all about chaos and the disintegrating family and pain and suffering, as I said again, particularly internal pain and suffering. And yet it is put together with the precision of a Swiss timepiece.
Mm.
And that, I mean, so from an aesthetics point of view, from a novel, from a writer's point of view, I just think it's an exquisite piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
I learned about the use of the interior monologue and stream of consciousness from him, and to some extent from Joyce, because they are the two proponents, genitors of that device or technique. And the language is just so, I mean, I won't keep waxing eloquent about this, but there is a sentence in Absalom, Absalom, which is his other great novel, which runs on for 1500 words. It goes on for pages, you know?
Yeah.
And I read it. I've read it more than once. I read it in class when I was doing my master's program and so on. And it works. I mean, it works. It's not just a run-on and you come on. Going off. It's not like that. So.
It's interesting that you point at that. I remember when I read Gravity's Rainbow, Thomas Pynchon, Gravity's Rainbow, and God, this is sacrilege, but there's a sentence that went on for, I forget, 9 pages, whatever it was, you know, and reading it over, and it was like, really, okay, this really is a sentence, but amazing. I mean, wonderful, amazing. It became a book that I could, the story was, at least my understanding of it, was sort of beside the point. It almost felt like this guy's just showing us what he can do.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary.
I mean, I don't think, I think it's interesting you bring up Pynchon, who nobody really talks about, is one of the great unsung, in my judgment, underappreciated authors of the 20th century. And Gravity's Rainbow is a work of real genius. You know, I also read V, which is his other.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, anyway.
Yeah.
I think you see the stream of consciousness and the interior monologue are often kind of criticized as being show-offy and inaccurate and so on. But that I don't know whether it's simple jealousy or misunderstanding or whatever, or just taste, because not everything is good for everybody.
Sure, right.
But it's, I don't find it that way at all. I think it's fascinating and powerful, and it can sweep you up and take you to places that you wouldn't go otherwise.
Right.
And
right.
For me, I'll just add a little piece about myself. I think language, words, are essentially music at their core. They're lyric. They're music at their core. And they represent to me a pathway to transcendence in the same way that that the best poetry, the best music will take you to places that will give you a sense of reality that goes beyond the literal meanings of the words.
Mm-hmm.
And can make your heart and your mind and your soul soar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I have a boring question, which is there anything about that? Like, was there a process for writing this that you sort of stuck with? Or, I mean, 40 years of sticking with the same process is hard to imagine, but.
I didn't write. I mean, it wasn't as though I wrote every year for 40 years. I wrote it, and then I tried to sell it, and I didn't, and I put it away. And then I later on met an agent who took it on. I met her in a Chinese restaurant in Long Island, and she took it on.
Where all agents hang out.
Right. My point. Exactly. And she took it on, and we got close, but she couldn't sell, so I put it away again.
Right.
Eventually, I found my publisher, and he liked it. Now it's in the world where I've always thought it ought to be. So.
Yeah. Well, and I'm gonna ask this question, but it doesn't mean we're ending, but it's the most boring of the questions, which is, you know, so if your next book takes you 40 years,
yeah,
you'll be famous for something other than writing the book. So is there a next?
Put it this way. I'd be happy to have that happen. Actually, as long as you bring it up, I'm going to be 80 on Monday.
Like a mazel tov. Yeah.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Yeah.
So it's an issue I'm acutely aware of. But.
Well, it just means, you know, 120, you'll get to your second novel. So is there another piece in the works?
There is. It's I haven't committed a word to paper yet, but for a while I've had an idea that's been kind of percolating in my head, and it's a novel that will feature, it will be focused on and feature Mao Zedong and Michael Jackson, and be
they're famous for hanging out together, of course.
I figure maybe they'll do they'll moonwalk together or something. And it'll focus on fame and power, and the consequences for the soul of the individual dealing with them.
Yeah,
and I'm close. I'm not ready to really dive in, but I'm close. I don't know how long this one will take me to write, or if I'll be able to finish it. But it's an interesting project. I know that much.
It sounds interesting, right? You know, just the idea. But, well, so what is there anything else that you'd like to say about the book, or people purchasing the book, or anything else that we haven't said already?
It's, I don't know. You catch me off guard here.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't have a prepackaged answer for this question. I'll say it this way. This, my book, my novel, The Harvesting of Haystack's Game, it's not the easiest read. It isn't a novel that you pick up in an airport to while away a few hours on a plane. It is what I hope is serious literary fiction. It's very much about language. I want to take you on a journey on the river of words to that I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
I think if any reader gives his or her attention to it, opens his or herself up to it, you can be rewarded and go on that journey and find yourself in a better place, at least for a while.
Mm. That's a perfect way to end this conversation. Well, it's not an end this conversation. We're not going to end this conversation because now I'm really pissed off that the book hadn't arrived before, and now eager that it will be arriving. And yeah, it sounds fascinating. And I hope there's a next. You know,
yeah, maybe.
Unless it tortures you, in which case, nah.
And if it takes me 40 years to write it, and I'm around to spend those 40 years writing it, I won't be sad at all.
No. I'm one of those people who say, would you like to live forever? And everybody goes, no. And it's like, yeah, I want to see how it turns out. Are you kidding me?
So we can assume it's better than the alternative. Well, we're not sure, but we think it's better than the alternative.
Yes, right, right. So, well, let me just say thank you. And I will, just so you know, I'll have the picture of the cover of the book at the beginning and the end. So it'll be up there. People will see what it looks like.
If anybody is interested in me, further interested in me,
I will absolutely put that up as well.
Website. Doesn't everybody these days? And that is just very simple. It's www.steveschlam.com. S-T-E-V-E-S-C-H-L-A-M. All small letters, no punctuation.
All right. Hey, Steve, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. I'm so glad we had this second conversation as well.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.